This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show. This is the Rich Eisen Show. Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I would say to the Pats now, who wins the game is not the team with the best players. Who wins the game is the players with the best team.
Today's guests, actor Josh Lucas, actor Nikolai Coster-Waldau, Super Bowl 60 storylines, your phone calls, latest news, and more. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two, the Rich Eisen Show on the air on Disney Plus and the ESPN app, our usual spots, but we're on ESPN linear cable today as well. So we say hello to everybody out there watching ESPN and listening on ESPN Radio or Sirius XM Channel 80. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. Have a chat with us. The actor Nikolai Coster-Waldau is going to be in studio. The Kingslayer, is going to be in studio in hour number three of this show. So we're going to have a great chat with the Kingslayer of the Game of Thrones from back in the day. But joining us now from Palm Royale, we just talked about Shrinking with Ted McGinley last week, and available on Apple TV, another hit show, Palm Royale, season two at its finale last month. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, actor Josh Lucas is here. Good to see you, buddy. How are you, man? Good to see you, man.
Very happy to be in the nicest stage studio of all of Hollywood.
Thank you, sir. I will take that, man. I will take that from you and run with it. And, you know, obviously so much to talk about with you. Let's start with the sports aspect of it.
Well, you know what I want to talk about? This was the first weekend without football, and I'm struggling a little bit. And I thought about it. I was like, what's it like for you, man? I mean, I know we have this big Super Bowl coming up, but like,
yeah.
I literally told my brother, I was like, I'm worried about the postpartum depression.
Tell me about it.
I mean, do you go through it every year?
I go through it every year where I'm wondering, you know, there's a void. But yesterday was the first Sunday I had not been on television or worked in quite some time.
Sure.
And I looked up in the sky. I'm like, wow, the sun is shining. Like there's an outdoors, you know. But then at the end of the...
Is it a good feeling for you then that you get a break
and
the rest of us just suffer?
Listen, it's the ultimate first class problem. But, you know, yes, football not being played and after... The Super Bowl's over. It is a complete and total loss. It's a void. You know what I mean?
What I think has really surprised me about this season, you know, we've talked about it before. I'm a lifelong Seahawks fan.
Yes, sir.
I've got this 13-year-old boy who's as big an obsessive fan as and so the two of us, we really share it, right?
Yes.
And because the NFL has just become so shockingly brilliant in its entertainment, and
yes,
that wild card weekend when you were able to lock in for four games in a row, you know, that were some of the best sports I've ever seen.
Right. Yeah.
Every single game.
Right.
I even heard him, you know, Mike McDonald talking about it, the coach of the Seahawks, saying how he was like, you know, I started to care deeply about one team winning. When why did I care so much about one?
Sure.
You know, I've had that feeling. So there's kind of that post weekend letdown every time of like, okay, back to reality. You know,
right.
To be so involved in the sport. But then with the Seahawks in particular, this whole season, I found myself being kind of emotional in a way that's been surprising to me.
Well, how so? What do you mean?
Like, well, so we were lucky. We got to see both games, both Rams games, meaning the one that was here that they lost,
right,
you know, the last second with the field goal. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the extraordinary one at Lumen Field.
Which the Thursday night one?
The Thursday night one.
Oh my God.
Which was...
What a
game. Mind-blowing to be in that stadium.
Now, what was it like, though, early fourth quarter when you're down 30-14? The Rams just picked off Sam Darnold inside the 5-yard line, and you thought this thing was what?
Like, well, literally, like, this is why I'm saying all this, was because I thought, like, do we go? You know what I mean? Because there was reasons why we had a very early flight. There was a bunch of different reasons. I was like, and my heart was like, I was hurting.
Mm-hmm.
My heart was like having this kind of like emotional reaction. And I was like, that's wrong. You can't, I don't even mention that, right?
Yes.
And so obviously then it that, you know, Shahid does the return and right. suddenly we're back in it. And, but like the emotion, I've never, ever understood what it is to be a soccer hooligan, but suddenly I'm like, oh, I get it. Like, I get it. I understand why, you know, yeah. Bills fans are suffering the way that they
sure.
are.
Right.
And so emotionally, like, that's what's been surprising. And even obviously in this last playoff game with the Rams, I mean, I felt like I was on a roller coaster where my son was like, calm down, Dad. And I'm like, oh my God.
So you passed this on to your son, is what you're saying.
You know,
or vice versa in a way.
It might be the fact that he's so invested
yes.
and that it's something we share so deeply together. We're so, like, we just lock in during, yeah.
How did the Seahawks become the team, though? I mean, you're born in Arkansas
born
and you
Arkansas,
bounced around, right?
Bounced around, but I went to high school in the Seattle, Gig Harbor, Washington, a small little fishing village not far. And so the first football game NFL game I ever went to was in the Kingdom. You know, the Steve Largent, great Jim Zorn era.
Yes.
Right? And so the first team that I ever supported for mm-hmm. the NFL
yes.
was, you know, I guess a little late in my life. But so I didn't. So, I you know, it was that's the first thing I shared with my dad. First time we ever went to an NFL game, Kingdom, uh-huh. like all of it. And so I became a Seahawks fan at that point. Have always stayed one.
Yeah.
But then, you know, then I think it does have to do with the fact that my son has just grabbed onto it so hard, so
yeah.
deeply.
Right.
We should
you've bonded. And now look at all those pictures that we just showed from your Instagram where you're just locked in and you're tattooing your face and stuff like that. You are into it.
I'm
all the way in. And Darnold doing what he's doing and JSN doing what he's doing and Kupp doing what he's doing and the running game and they're just so young and talented and fast. They play fast. Yeah. They hit you in the mouth too. So they're quick and they're physical, which is what you obviously want in a football team. You know what I mean?
You know, I think what John Schneider, the GM, has done there is the fact that this guy's he's gotten executive of the year with two different, you know, organizations in a sense, even
yes.
though it's the same organization.
Sure.
It's the first time, obviously, people know that's ever, you know, people who really follow sports know that that's happened. But what this guy's done, and even down to like, did you hear that he went to mass, you know, he's Catholic and went to mass and prayed to be able to hire Mike McDonald. Like
that is news to
yeah,
me. I did not know that.
He did. And you realize like, that's how deeply that, you know, his, like, it's almost sacrilegious, but like,
yes.
you know, his true deep, understanding of the game, his ability, all the things that he's done is really remarkable. And that I am struck by Mike McDonald. I'm struck by like the interesting like tactician of him, the quietness of him. You know, coaching really fascinates me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just am in awe of what this team and this guy's done. And I mean, you know, my son believes that we might be on the verge of a dynasty.
Well, I'll leave you with this nugget then before we move on a little bit here. Josh Lucas, because the NFL Network research department, I don't know how they snagged this, but I should know what John Schneider did to hopefully sway the coach to be hired, right? That every time there's been a new pope, the Seahawks have made the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
Did you know that?
I did. That's why there's this there's this weird, obviously, the pope element, but then the fact that John Schneider went and prayed at mass, you know?
Well, I guess it's a good thing they didn't take on the Bears because the current pope is a Bears fan.
Absolutely.
So that would have... That would have smashed up against, you know, higher powers.
But I loved your episode that that you did recently, which was all of the mind-boggling statistics of that Rams matchup, of that playoff matchup.
Yeah.
Just how close it is. I mean, it was...
Oh, yeah. Like, it was 1 point difference in terms of the history of the
history,
series.
But also, yeah, everything about it is just... And, you know, right. I will say as well during that playoff game and the fact that we ended up winning, I did feel a little bit like, oh, that was the Super Bowl. You know, there was a sense of...
There is that sense, you know, except the Patriot fan over there might beg to differ. And
we'll see you next weekend. Right?
That's right.
Yeah,
there's no doubt. And it's just that the 2001 Patriots team also had a second-year quarterback and a second-time head coach go up against an NFC West team that was supposed to spank them, and we all know what happened in that one.
Look,
so, like, it's truly the any given Sunday, but you take a look at the matchup, and the Seahawks do come in, I think, as the better team, for sure.
They're on fire right now. They really are. I mean, you've seen it. You've seen them just grow and develop. And even down to, like, that moment after the Rams win in the playoffs the other night where you saw Mike McDonald say, he didn't care. Like, there was something kind of cold in a way that I've not seen from him, which was like, oh, this guy's, I've always sensed, and again, to go to the coaching of it all, right?
Yes.
That he was, now he's not the friend of all the players, but there was a kind of very friendly, jovial, kind of good guy aspect to him. But suddenly to see that, the hard edge to him that,
yes,
that is appearing. But I feel that way throughout the whole way the Hawks are playing and the discipline of what they're doing, which is why obviously that moment when the taunting foul happened the other day, you saw the team, it's like not acceptable. They're playing in a unified, cohesive way.
Yes.
That I think is a testament to the organization as a whole. But that's what, you know, again, we'll see with the Super Bowl. I'm fascinated by Vrabel too. I mean, Vrabel is obviously his own force of and to do what he's done.
Yeah,
so
man.
These two young, powerful coaches coming. It's great. It's the NFL's on fire.
Speaking of coaching, I've got Josh Lucas here on the Rich Eisen Show. We talked about this the last time you were here, but we have a new audience, so I'd love to just dive into it. I was at the UCLA women's basketball game with my daughter, wife, and some of her friends, and our friends yesterday in Pauley Pavilion. And I show them the banners that are hanging in Pauley Pavilion, 64, 65, and then 67 all the way to 73. And the 1966 one is missing.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's the Glory Road year.
The great
Don obviously, Haskins. The great Don Haskins, yeah. Who you played in the film, the Disney film. Here we are on Disney Plus. Yep. You met Don Haskins, right? Did you meet him?
Oh, more than that. I spent a lot of time with him. In fact, even after the movie was done, I would occasionally go down to El Paso and get in his big white pickup and go out to the desert and drink tequila. It was one of the best things in the world to do. You know, the first time I met Haskins, he walked up to me and very gruffly sort of patted me on the belly and said, "You better start drinking beer, son." They called me the fat man, you know.
That's what he said to you?
Yeah. Look, I Jerry Bruckheimer, who's the producer of that movie, is a brilliant producer, obviously, yes. Has proved it, you know, for decades now. And one of the things that Jerry Bruckheimer does that separates him is he gives, you know, like with Tom Cruise, he's putting them with the drivers for F1, right? He's putting, or sorry, Tom Cruise with the fighter pilots, right?
Sure.
I mean, they're doing immersive, detailed, diligent research to become those people, like Brad Pitt with F1 or whatever. So with what he did with me is he surrounded me with unbelievable coaches. I had Pat Riley, I had Tim Floyd, coach of Chicago Bulls. Tim Floyd was interesting because he was Don Haskins, basically, adopted son, and truly Haskins raised him to be a certain kind of coach. And so not only did I have Haskins with me, I had these different coaches who were really imparting sort of, you know, coaching wisdom onto me, to the point that at times I would get really frustrated and be like, I'm an actor, I'm not a coach, you know, because I had to almost push back and be like, I'm trying to do a performance. I get that you guys want to see that, particularly because what Bruckheimer was doing and the director of that movie is that we were not so much improvising, but some of the stuff that was happening on the sidelines during the games was very much, they wanted to see the essence of what made Don Haskins the coach he was in those little huddles that were before, you know, during the games, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they would be saying to me, you should be saying this, and you should be saying this, and you should be saying this, both Haskins, both Floyd, and Pat Riley in particular. And it was like I had these deep conversations with them about what made great coaching. And Haskins was very unusual. You know, I think in some ways Haskins out Bobby Knight at Bobby Knight and his intensity, which is saying, you know, it's kind of the ultimate level, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what struck me about Don Haskins is how much his players loved him. Even decades later, they talked about him as the most important person in their whole life, almost to a man, every player I met. And that's what it goes back to, like what I'm seeing with Mike McDonald or even Vrabel. You know, you're seeing the thing that always interests me as I watch these guys on the sideline is Sean Payton, right? Sean Payton is a force of a, you know, in a way, a dark coach, right? Mm-hmm. He's a tough, tough coach. And that's one of the things I haven't fully seen with Mike McDonald, but I'm so interested. And I don't know, I'm watching, you know, the way that these men manipulate the players, both psychologically, but also just from the way that they get them to step up. I don't know if manipulate's the right word, but
right, cause
Pat Riley would say it.
Because love.
Yeah.
Yes, because it is sometimes done with love in terms of trying to bond and have a collective be, you know, greater than, you know, than others, some of its parts and things of that nature. I mean, Pat Riley, you mentioned him. He was on the Kentucky team that lost.
Absolutely.
And so what did he bring to the equation for you?
Well, he told me it was a seminal point in his life because he said from the moment the game started, that final, the Final Four championship that 1966 won, the Glory Road movies based on that, mm-hmm. And he said that he knew, you looked over at Haskins and Haskins said, in the movie, they do a kind of like a heightened movie version of the speech that happens before the game, which again is how he manipulated the players to be not just angry. I mean, to be just the intensity of what they came out for. And Pat Riley said he knew it from the very first moment. And it's a true story in the movie where Don Haskins said, you go out there and to David Latin, who is a big, tall, incredible basketball player. And he said to him, you slam it down their throats, meaning you dunk. And dunking at that point was almost like, frowned upon, right? And he said, and Riley said that he knew the game was over with. Like from the very first moment, which was what Haskins had attempted to, he wanted the Kentucky team to be intimidated from the very beginning. And there was something again about the psychology I was talking about the other day about how much people have been really rough on Sam Darnold, I think in kind of unfair ways. Mm-hmm. And particularly if you look at him statistically. And I was saying, if I was Mike McDonald, how I might be kind of, I don't want to say getting in his head about that, but to make, and somehow you've seen Darnold is, there's no longer, those questions have sort of started to disappear.
Well, we had Jordan Palmer, the quarterback guru, on the show a couple weeks ago, and he says that Sam Darnold is internally motivated. He's not externally motivated. He's not motivated by what others are saying about him, and that Mike McDonald knows that, and he might be, he might not say, hey, you hear what they're saying about you, which is a way to manipulate a player or coach a player, know what I mean? But I think just to go back to McDonald here, Josh Lucas here on the Rich Eisen Show, is that you're wondering if dark side is there. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's there. Because you heard about the totem pole in their meeting room where they have a totem pole, or did Brock Hewitt refer to it as a spear or something like that? That's mm-hmm. in the meeting room where Pete Carroll used to have a basketball net. Mm-hmm. And he removed the basketball and he net and he put the spear, and they're taking a helmet of every team that they've beaten.
Wow.
And putting it on like a head on, speaking of, Game of Thrones, like a on the spike. They're putting those helmets on a spike, which is, you don't hear that. And
what do you think that John Schneider saw in Mike McDonald that was so strong that he was able, he prayed for it? Like, what?
I don't know. That's a good question. Obviously, if your team wins at all, that'll be a question that hopefully I do get to ask him. Either way, if not. But what I think he saw was a level-headed but intense head coach who's on the defensive side of the ball. And if you're in a division against Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, you better take care of that side. Mm. Like, if you're going to be going against the Rams twice and the Niners twice, or in this case this year, three times, you better have that side buttoned up.
Yeah.
And I think that was a choice, a clear choice. Like, okay, they're zigging, and boy, are they zigging.
Yeah.
We're zagging, and we'll get our offensive side of the ball right in a complimentary way with Mike McDonald as a play caller defensively and a culture changer CEO overall. Yeah. And I think that was a choice, and looks like it's working out.
Even down to the very amazing choices that have worked out as well, is like moving on from DK Metcalf. That's like those things that you think like, whoa.
And Geno.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
You're swapping out your quarterback and your number one.
Really?
But you're like, okay, JSN, we've seen what you can do.
Yeah.
Let's do that. And then, Rams, you're going to get rid of Cup and a cap casualty. We'll take him too.
Yeah.
And then, I'm a Michigan guy, which is how I know Mike McDonald. I mean, A.J. Barner is – nobody talks about him at tight end.
Fully.
And he's outstanding.
Bobo's interesting. I mean, there's like – he's got a touchdown. Exactly. Like,
what the heck?
Yeah, no.
And absolutely. It's all working for you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Palm Royale before we send you out on your Super Bowl Monday. What a cast, man, that you're involved with. And in the same way that I in football might be on in your house quite a bit – my oldest son binge watches Palm Royale. He loves it. My Zan cannot get enough of it. We see it all the time. So what attracted you to this?
Look, it was a dreamy job from the very beginning. You know, first of all, obviously when you have a cast that includes Kristen Wiig, you know, Kristen Wiig to me, you go back and look at her work on Saturday Night Live. She's fantastic. One of the greats. And so that's, you know, right there. Boom. Laura Dern. I mean, you know, icon. But then Carol Burnett, Allison Janney, I mean, just becomes sort of like, where I was like, wait, really? Like, I'll do this job without, you know, for free, you know, right. Truly, just to go right. Be a part of it. Because again, it kind of goes to the team aspect of it. What actually surprises me, and I do think a lot of this has to do with Carol Burnett, is that Carol Burnett is the most kind, extraordinary, professional human being I think I've ever come in contact with,
which
is mind-boggling considering in her mid-90s, she still walks on set and says quietly hello to everyone and knows everyone's name. And the stories about her from the time that she was even beginning her career, that she responded to every single fan letter personally, that she would show it, just truly, like, all of our crews have stories where they sent a letter to Carol Burnett, multiple people on our crew, to come see her, you know, their middle school play. And Carol Burnett showed up. Like, stuff that's just kind of like you kind of like arch your eyes, like, really? And the essence of this woman and this legend and this icon, but also just the kindness of her, but the professional, like, you know, she's early to set. She knows her lines better than anybody else, you know, all the different things. So it sets a tone and that, you know, this group of women and these incredible performers, I think everyone takes, you know, leadership or takes that leadership. And there's the opposite of any diva behavior on this show. It's a team of people who love and are there. We also feel incredibly grateful we're working in Los Angeles. You know, we're trying to make something that's fun and light. There's nothing about it that is attempting. We live in very strange times, as we all know. I'm surprised how much when I look at television these days, it's dark. There's a real darkness to a lot of, you know, the offerings that are out there.
Yes.
So we purposely, I think, are attempting to make a very light, playful, silly, you know, piece of confection and just have a great time.
Well, it's fitting that you're on Apple TV where there's Ted Lasso, there's your show, there's Shrinking. I mean, there's a lot of good feelings when you're watching shows like that.
I don't know. I can't attest to what the inherent sort of drive from the corporate side of Apple, but I do know that it's Disney, right? Same thing. Like, Disney has certain elements that they want to put good things out into the world, and there are certain limitations within that.
Yes.
I think Apple has a similar kind of thing that they're trying to do.
I love it. By the way, in that chair just a couple of weeks ago was Tracy Letts. And we talked about Ford versus Ferrari.
That man is a sports fan. Oh my God.
You want to talk about, he was in the HBO show about the Lakers Showtime, you know, all that business. And we talked about the Ford v Ferrari with him, and the scenes that you're in with him are just phenomenal.
One of my favorite things about making Ford versus Ferrari was I found out that he, you know, we both had whatever separate vans that would pick us up every day. And I was like, well, it's kind of along the way. If you guys pick up me first, can we pick up Tracy? And I would just basically like get him to tell stories every day. And he was fine with it as long as he got out first and I manipulated the situation like a coach, because if I get to spend time with Tracy Letts, I'm going to do it.
Dude, it's a pleasure having you back here. You come anytime you want, Josh Lucas.
Thanks.
Our home is yours, and good luck to your Seahawks, and our best to Noah. Hopefully he will be – how old is he now?
He's 13. Yeah.
Okay.
Look, again, to what I love about Mike McDonald is that's a guy who worked his way up through the system, you know, in such an interesting way without ever having played, right, obviously. I'm kind of wondering if my boy's got a – I don't know if he's going to have a coach, but he wants to be the GM. He's after John Schneider's job.
Okay. So. Have your head in a swivel, John. I'm sure John would say let him finish with his job first before your son takes it. Everyone check out Palm Royale. Its season finale of season 2 was last month, so binge watch it. And you will not be disappointed. Great to see you, sir.
Thank you.
Josh Lucas here on The Rich Eisen Show, back with more and your phone calls, 844-204-RICH in a sec.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.
Why not? Back here on The Rich Eisen Show, or the ESPN Radio simulcast with Disney Plus, the ESPN app, and ESPN Cable. Let's take a phone call. People are waiting on the phone line. Let's go to Griffin in Connecticut here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Griffin? That's line 5, Jason. What's up, Griffin?
Hey, Rich. To me, the thing I'm looking at in the Super Bowl is the Patriots' defensive line has been able to get pressure on every team they played. Mm-hmm. We have noticed Sam Darnold does struggle with pressure in his face.
Yes.
So the Patriots can do what they did and try to figure out things and put pressure in Darnold's face. Does Darnold struggle? He hasn't had much pressure on his face in this playoffs. The game against the Rams, he had no pressure on his face, and you saw what happened. So the Patriots can get pressure. That could help them big time.
I agree, Griffin. Thank you for the call. And that's, you know, a strength of Seattle, though, is their offensive line. I mean, if you tailor the tape this, whose offensive line would you take in this
Super Bowl? Oh, well, I mean,
you know what I mean?
The one not starting two rookies on the left
right,
side.
Right. So, yeah. You know, obviously it always comes down to the trenches, but Milton Williams is the what an
yeah, him and Christian Barmore, they're going to have spectacular
right.
games
for right up the right, and again, yeah, right that's the gut. Pressure right up the gut, yeah. Which nobody wants. I mean, that's
right.
That's clearly a matchup that everyone looks for in any Super Bowl.
No doubt.
Jeffrey in Richmond, Virginia is here on the Rich Eisen Show, line 6. Jason Feller, what's up, sir? Jeffrey?
Hey, Richard. How are you?
Your name, hold on a minute. Our call screener said Jeffrey. So, I mean, would you like to be called Jeff instead? I can do that.
No, Jeffrey's fine.
Okay, very good.
It was just that delivery, Mr. Eisen.
Oh, no, sorry. My older brother's name is Jeffrey. So, you know, sometimes it'll just come out that way from growing up with him. You know what I mean?
Understood. Listen, dude, I'm not that far from San Fran. I might come see that thing Wednesday, but
okay, that's not.
Let me think.
I have a feeling. Was that a threat? I don't have Jeffrey and I gotten off on the wrong
right.
What?
Like, hey, don't make me come down there.
I will like, show up on Wednesday.
It's what didn't I hear?
Yeah,
okay. Oh, Richmond, California. You're in Richmond, California, not Virginia. Okay, very good. You should come, Jeffrey.
I think I might, but listen, dude, I'm irritated with you.
Well, we can tell.
Say what?
It just keeps going in different directions.
I love this.
Why am why are you irritated with me?
Okay. So look, I'm 58 years old.
Okay.
I attended university in Boston. I followed this team a little bit. But I have a hot take I tried to make with you, sir, last week.
All right.
About why Hoodie is not in the Hall of Fame.
All right.
I'll get there, sir. I'll get there. I tried to make 4 points with you, Rich.
Okay.
I'd almost like to do it like you're the judge, right? Let me make my case to you. 2.5 minutes.
Oh, but I'll give you 90 seconds, Jeffrey. Go for it. Go.
All right. Then I got to get to the last point, Your Honor.
Go for it.
Here we go. In my old world, in your current world,
yes.
Everyone's world.
Yeah.
If you're the best at what you do.
Right.
If you're the very best.
Yes.
And they're going to rename a trophy after you.
Right.
By definition, you're unemployable. That's the deal. That's the deal. And I know. For 100% certainty,
mm-hmm.
Bill Belichick wants to coach in the NFL.
Well, the reason why he's not coaching the NFL right now, if I may tell counselor from Richmond, California, to
objection.
Sit down, is age and whether you want to remake your entire building in his vision and needing to have that take some time and wondering how sustainable it might be when he's gone. That's part of the reason why, Jeffrey. And
no,
also, he's
Rich, particularly ridiculous. What are you talking about?
He's particularly expensive on top of it. So, you know, that may be the reason why he's not.
No, that's not the reason.
Rich. Why?
That's not the reason. Do you think Mac Jones's parents are in full support of Hoodie going in their first round after that great coaching job? Sure.
Okay. I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying towards the end of his career. Jeffrey, please do show up on Wednesday night.
No, we can Richard, one more point.
Uh-huh.
One more point, please.
Yeah.
The coach of my current team, Mr. John Harbaugh, right? He's an older dude because I know they want to hire 25-year-old
there's a different
coach in the NFL.
And there's a different right? Jeffrey, and I appreciate the time. I do hope to meet you in person if you're in the area on Wednesday night. John Harbaugh's in his early 60s, and it doesn't matter what happened with Mac Jones and Bailey Zappi and the end of the years at the end of the time and in New England. His time in New England is unparalleled.
Yeah.
Unparalleled, to say the least. And everybody who's hired a coach right now should be so lucky to hook up somebody as institutionally knowledgeable in the sport of football and is as excellent in motivating players and having somebody like Tom Brady as his avatar. Everyone should be so lucky that anybody that's just been hired would go on a run even half as successful, even half as successful, as the one that Belichick had in New England. And, I mean, we'll be talking about it, obviously, you know, up until Thursday night when it's confirmed that he's not on that stage with the rest of the Canton 2026 class. And we'll see who does make it. We'll see how many of the senior committee members that so many others were voting for, thinking that Belichick would get in, if not this year, because everyone else would be voting for him, or next year. You know, it's bottom line is, you know, Mike Mayock referred to it in hour one. We need to either A, give an up or down vote separate to a coach and a contributor and a senior committee class. Or you just expand the number of people who get into the Hall of Fame and say, you can vote for all five of these guys, the three senior committee finalists, the contributor finalists, and the coach finalists. And then all of us who cover it or go to it or attend it, if you're a returning Hall of Famer, you just have to sit through two more speeches than the maximum currently allows. It's just that simple, you know? And then you add another room. The bus gallery is going to run out of room at some point. Not taking anybody's busts out of there. So at some point, you're going to have to bust down a wall for the busts. So you might as well just figure it out. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. As for the recent hires, head coaching hires, over the weekend, you had Mike LaFleur joining the Arizona Cardinals. They let the Rams offensive coordinator out of the building. And I guess kick the tires one more time on Clint Kubiak, and Mike LaFleur is now the new head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. So, by the way, and this is happening on the same day that Jonathan Gannon has been named the former Arizona head coach, the defensive coordinator of the Green Bay Packers.
Yep.
And as you know, he was the Super Bowl, NFC champion Super Bowl defensive coordinator of the, Eagles in Glendale, Arizona in that Super Bowl. So he just stayed put after that game. And then he was the head coach there. And now he's replaced by the brother who's now his boss. The brother of the guy who's now his boss. Did I get it right?
That's funny.
So Mike LaFleur takes Jonathan Gannon's job. Jonathan Gannon takes Jeff Hafley's job for Mike's brother, Matt. And in case you're wondering what we would call it, the LaFleur Bowl or whatever, they don't play each other next year.
Ah.
Yeah. The Packers don't play the Arizona Cardinals next
year. NFC Championship game.
And we have no, maybe that could happen. Listen, and the question is, what does he want to do with Kyler Murray? And, you know, it's another big moment for a guy who used to be a Jet. This week as well, Mike LaFleur was the guy who was the original offensive coordinator for Robert Saleh. Didn't, you know, work out. So what does he want to do with Kyler Murray? That's going to be one of the bigger questions of March. What happens with Kyler Murray and who takes him if the Cardinals are like, yeah, we're done? And that's another big question. And then there's Clint Kubiak, the current offensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks. What was that tweet that Adam Schefter put out over the weekend? That
he intends to work out a contract. Yeah.
Which, by the way, try that one at home.
Okay.
I don't know how Adam comes up with the phrasing. It's pretty incredible. You know what I'm going to do is, you know, I'm going to tell Suze, you know, I intend to try to notice the dish I left in. How will that fly at home, do you think?
I'm not well. Not well.
Can you clean up the living room well? You know, I intend to try
to notice the sock that I've just walked past three times on the floor.
Can you close the cupboard? I intend to try.
Yeah.
Susie is a cupboard closed person.
That's why I brought it up.
Oh, she brought that up here to you?
You've told us that.
Oh, I've told you.
Years, yeah, yeah. Remember you were telling me one day you were home dolo, so you're like, you left a cup in the sink.
Yeah.
I intend to shut the cupboard. You threw a sock on the floor.
Yeah. I intend to try to notice all those things.
Showed her who's boss.
Right. At any rate, so let's hope.
Closed when she got home, though.
Let's hope that Clint Kubiak for the Raiders' sake that they didn't wait all this time for him to just say, I'll go to the Super Bowl and then say no to you. It would be an interesting hire, the way that he has dialed things up for the Seattle Seahawks this year. He was in his bag in the NFC Championship game, in his BAG. He is in his bag. And if they, you know, they missed out on Ben Johnson, now they got the latest young hotshot guy getting his chance. You know, son of Gary, who won Super Bowl 50. Now his son's in Super Bowl 60 and maybe leaving to be Tom Brady's handpicked choice. And he winds up doing it for Seattle, which, as you know, moved on from Pete. And now has him there. It's just, you see, and then Seattle's taking on New England, which was great for Brady back in the day. You noticing, I could keep going and connecting and connecting. And
you're
connecting.
Like Charlie Day looking at that wall.
I know, until it's time to play friggin' football on Sunday. But as good a choice as any. And hook him up with Fernando Mendoza. There he is. Clint Kubiak intends to try to work out a deal. I intend to try to fold that shirt rather than leaving it on a chair. I intend to try.
I intend to try to eat all my vegetables so I can have dessert.
I hope it works out better for Clint than it would for me or any other human being that's picking up what I'm putting down about your home life. You know what I mean?
I just got a text from your wife.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
It just simply said, not a great idea.
Not a good It has been rejected. But it's a great idea for the Raiders and for Clint Kubiak.
Yes.
I think, right? Wouldn't you want to intend to go to Vegas?
Yes.
And be the head coach for Fernando Mendoza and figure out how to work in Ashton Jeanty and Brock Bowers.
Uh-huh.
The very first phone call you make, though, is to Max Crosby to say, listen,
we're not trading you.
And we're going to play you all 17 if you'd like.
Whatever you want.
Whatever you
want
to finish the string, pal. The Condor finishes the string. The Condor stays like before.
Unless
that'll be my first
out.
Phone call, yeah. Right?
Unless he wants out.
I don't think he wants out.
I'll let him out.
I don't think he's... I don't know. I shouldn't speak for him.
I mean, he says he doesn't, but I mean, you know.
I mean,
I don't know. Unless you give him the Miles Garrett deal. you don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. How much?
I don't hold that against
him. By the way, Jim Schwartz might take that deal.
Maybe.
Jim's, because Raheem Morris took the Jim, you know, everyone thinks, oh, Jim's going to force his way out of Cleveland, even though he's under contract there. Because he doesn't want to be there anymore. He doesn't like the way things are run there anymore. And Raheem Morris gets hired in San Francisco, which might have been a nice Jim Schwartz landing spot. The Browns have him under contract. And he's like, I am not coming back. How much? Could be the old deal.
It's a good deal.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Jim, you don't want to stay here anymore, huh? You're pissed. And I will not work for Todd. How much? How many times can I keep doing that bit? You know, I intend to try to stop doing that bit. Okay. Think we made our point? All right. I intend to try to call Susie during the commercial break and see if everything's okay.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Well, no, I care deeply about pediatric cancer research and awareness. That's why I'm proud to talk about Hyundai Hope on Wheels. For over 27 years, every Hyundai sold has helped fund life-saving pediatric cancer research. Together with over 850 dealers nationwide, they've raised more than $277 million, supporting over 25,000 kids in their fight against cancer. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more. At Hyundai, hope isn't optional. It comes standard. Okay, this is a moment for me here.
Oh, no.
No, listen, it may be previewing what's coming in March or early April. But Dusty May, God bless you, sir, and everything you stand for, my coach of the University of Michigan basketball team and what he does and how he stands for nothing. And he's got like this cool demeanor, but inside he's like some smiling assassin. Mm. That's what he's doing. Putting together a team that is such a pleasure to watch. And again, I haven't watched Arizona start to finish. There's tons of really good teams in college basketball, men's college basketball, I should mention, right now. And, you know, because the UCLA women's that Susie and I went with Taylor and her friend Mac and her parents yesterday, they're a pleasure to watch too. They share the basketball. They play in any game you want. And with fast break, you want to go inside, outside, the whole business. Michigan's the same way, Michigan men's. And it's great to see. And certainly when he beats my friend Tom Izzo, Tom, listen, he knows this too, is that I root for him except on 2 days, or if Michigan plays Michigan State in the Big Ten championship, or boy, if they ever play each other in the NCAA tournament, my God, that would be amazing. Every other day I root for him. I really do, because he's one of my favorites, but against Michigan, and he feels the same way. But did you guys see Dusty May wound up sitting on the Michigan State bench before the game? Did you see any of that? This photograph is truly one of my favorite photographs in the history of rooting for Michigan sports. So he comes out of the tunnel, apparently, and the Michigan State students that are behind the bench see him, and I'll let him describe how he wound up sitting here and just taking all the pregame abuse from the Michigan State faithful that were already there.
I was actually just taking a peek. I thought when we pulled in, the students were still lined up down the block. And even when we rode in at the Kalamazoo entrance or whatever, there's a long line. And I assumed it was students. I was like, okay, they're not in yet. But, man, this is like we're building. This is a big time. There's a lot of anticipation for this game. And so I walked by, and I was greeted as soon as I stuck my head out on the court. And at that point, I was like, there's no way I'm ducking and running from this smoke now. This stuff doesn't bother me. And so I just let them get all their frustration and their animosity out early, and then that way they can enjoy the game. So I felt like I contributed to the environment just a little bit.
He's just taking it in, and the abuse behind him. And then Michigan took a 16-point lead at halftime. Michigan State did its usual nonstop defense, buckling down, tough rebounding. You know, you knew you had to get in the mosh pit with them type stuff. They wound up taking the lead, but Michigan won the game because, in all honesty, you know, I'm clearly biased. We're better. We're better. We are better. On the hoof, we're just better. We're better. And at the end of the day, we proved it. And he just, God, what he does and how he goes about it. Come on, you got to love that. And he just shines it off like, yeah, I'm just trying to contribute to their enjoyment of the game a little bit.
That picture needs to be blown up and hung somewhere.
Every Michigan, you know, friend I have, every Michigan side I follow, it's hang this in the Louvre.
Yeah.
This is the greatest. Like, I am here. And by the way, of all the bench, because he just sat down in an empty chair, this was the Michigan State bench. And just like sitting there, look at the kids behind him. My favorite one that post that I saw on a Michigan site was he was being hectored or hounded all by a bunch of students that got rejection letters from Michigan. And it's just truly one of my favorite things to say on this show.
So you think
and this platform, we're on radio, satellite, terrestrial, linear cable, and streaming. I got to say it everywhere.
So these kids wanted to go to Ann Arbor.
Yes.
They didn't get in.
And they found out that they're little siblings at the end of the day.
What's wrong with you?
Well, as long as Dusty can take the high road, I'll go down here.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.